Hello and welcome to Object Matters. My name's Craig Barker and I'm the Head of Public Engagement at the Chow Chak Wing Museum at the University of Sydney. Object Matters is a podcast that explores the relationship between our guests and an item within the museum collection. For this episode, I'm especially thrilled to be joined by my colleague at the museum, Jan Brazier, who is the curator of Maclay History Collections at the Chow Chak Wing Museum. Jan, thank you for joining us on Object Matters.
My great pleasure, Craig.
I've been wanting to get you on for quite some time.
You have.
So I'm very, very excited to finally get you in the studio. Could I begin by asking you about your background and your research interests?
My background is that is basically in historical research. I did my BA honours in University of Queensland quite a while ago. I was very fortunate then I got a job at the Australian National University, and I was researcher for the wonderful Professor Ken Inglis, and I worked on a couple of his major publications, which was The History of the ABC and War Memorials in the Australian Landscape. Wonderful projects.
The Sacred Places book.
For which, actually, I had to take photographs, as it turns out, in my untutored way. And then, having decided I needed a career, I actually studied and did a postgrad diploma and became an archivist. The other side of the counter, I called it, to researchers. Funnily enough, at that point, museum studies was, you couldn't do part-time, but so I did this other one, archivist. And a brief stint in the ABC archives, I was very fortunate to become the first archivist at the Australian Museum. And that's how I actually entered the museum world.
Oh, right.
Wonderful in-house archives, the Australian Museum Archives, one of the most significant in Australia, goes back to its foundation, to the first minute book of 1836. And I then became interested in really the history of 19th century museums, colonial science, had photo collections. And then in 2007, I was then very lucky, and I moved over to what was in the Maclay Museum, part-time position. And since then, of course, we've become part of Chow Chak Wing Museum, referencing them to the Maclay collections, of which I'm part-time curator.
So you are curator of history collections. What does that role involve, and what are the nature of the collections that you care for?
There are two collections that I'm involved with. One is the Scientific Instruments and Apparatus Collection. This is a quite wonderful collection that has grown since about 1970s, and it now really reflects instruments and equipment used within teaching and research by the science disciplines at the university. It's quite diverse, and it covers the disciplines such as biology, physics, chemistry, geology, engineering, and so it's quite a wide range of instruments, primarily late 19th, 20th, but with some earlier.
Yeah.
The other collection, from which my object today is drawn, is of course the Historic Photograph Collection. This is a really interesting collection because it actually really came about around 1980.
Yep.
It came about because there was some historic archaeology people who'd studied here,
yes,
and Warren Wickman and Barry Groom in particular, and they'd become concerned about what they saw as a loss of people's personal photographic collections.
This is in private photo albums.
Private collection, yeah, family collections. So one of them had worked in a nursing home, and if you died without family, literally they'd tossed your photos in the tip. And it was also a time when photographs actually were becoming seen as historic evidence, which seems unusual this day when we're drenched in imagery.
Yes.
But then it was actually sort of new to use photographs as actual historical documents. Word got out in the press and literally donations came to the university, and the Maclay Museum then took it on. A little unusual because the Maclay Museum in a way was primarily a natural history, ethnographic museum with science. This is really a social history collection. So from that time, a large number of personal, family, private donations have come in, and it's a sort of social history collection. It covers photography from its beginnings right through to the mid-20th century. There's a lot of personal, family, leisure, travel, and formats of photography. So they were interested in the technology. So we have from daguerreotypes to right through all the formats into the early 20th century. And we also have university-related photographs, which are primarily big landslide collections.
Yep.
So it's, well, like most, would be Sydney, New South Wales, Australia. We are then beyond, depending on where the material come from. We do cover a lot of places around the world. Mm-hmm. So very interesting collection.
A lot of the images we use in teaching as well, too.
Yes, we're increasingly using them for a diverse range of teaching and research purposes. So it is a lovely collection.
Now, one of the current exhibitions on display in the Chow Chak Wing Museum that you curated is an exhibition titled The Stage Photograph. What's that particular show about?
Yes, I curated this exhibition. Basically, I have an interest in commercial photographic studios, particularly the 19th century. And prompted by also Katrina's exhibition, Photography and the Performative, but that's a very modern artist photography.
Contemporary art.
I've been thinking a lot about that artifice of the 19th century studio, which has its painted backgrounds and its props. And then what I did was, from that artifice, I considered in the exhibition where people are in costume, and there's two aspects. One, I have people in fancy dress or similar, which costume portraits, so they specially came and to the studio to capture that moment. This is when you had to go to the studio to take that moment. And then another aspect that I explore is where the photographer themselves used models or sitters in costume to stage a costume tableau, but it actually told a story or a joke. And so this is in the format of particular of stereographs, which are a sort of double image that when viewed gives you like a 3D effect. And it's a sort of unfamiliar aspect of photography, I thought, that usually the stereographs are very documentary and show you places around the world and let you travel and see great historic sites or places you don't know. But here we have a strain of photography which actually explored fictional scenes to amuse and entertain. So that's, in essence, the stage photograph.
It's a wonderful exhibition. Thank you. Now, Object Matters. As a podcast, we focus on one or a couple of particular objects. What have you chosen? I'm going to go out on a limb here and suggest that you've chosen something from the Historic Photography Collection, but what object have you chosen from the Chow Chak Wing Museum Collection for us to discuss today?
I have chosen a photograph from the Historic Photograph Collection. In fact, it is a small carte de visite photograph. Now, a carte de visite is a visiting card size photograph, so it's small. And it is a very interesting photograph of a bird. In fact, it is a pigeon. It is a large pigeon found in Samoa, where it's known as Manumia, and I'm sorry about that pronunciation, which could be wrong. In scientific names, it's Dedunculus strigus rostris, or the tooth-billed pigeon.
Wow.
And so this portrait of a bird, I call it a portrait of a notable bird.
Well, you're talking about the stage photograph. It's very formal, isn't it?
It is very posed, as you'll see. So the actual image shows you, and remember, it is a little visiting card sized albumen print that's been posted on a small card. It actually shows the main body of a pigeon to its sort of feet, and the pigeon is sitting on with its claws on top of a fingers of a clenched hand, and you see the hand, just the fingers and the wrist. The hand is resting on some sort of fabric sort of stool, cushion, and the background is a little sort of indistinct, not very clear.
Yeah.
So that is the photograph.
Now, when we were discussing this, you described this to me as a photograph with many, many stories, and I'm looking forward to hearing how you weave all of those stories together. But of all of the images in the Historic Photography Collection, the tens of thousands of images, why did you choose this particular photograph? And how did you actually first encounter this one?
Yeah, it's interesting. I encountered this photograph because the earlier exhibition I curated at the opening for the museum was The Business of Photography, reflecting my interest in 19th century studios. And I was very interested in certain Sydney studios And I basically look through almost all the carte de visites in our collection, which are portraits generally. And the carte de visite came into its own in, it arrives about 1858, but from 1860 on, it becomes the format for people to have their portraits taken, became very affordable, and really from then till the end of the 19th century, these are found through many family albums and collections. So I'm looking through studio photographs, and I'll just mention the other aspect of this photograph is the back.
Yep.
And on the back is the studio stamp of T.S. Glaister.
Yep.
And Glaister was one of the studio photographers I was interested in. And so I encountered this photograph through an interest in the work of photographic studios.
Yep.
I've chosen it really today because many photographs have little information recorded. But this photograph led me into stories that about it, and it took me in a way to, I learnt a lot researching it.
Mm-hmm.
And also I chose it today because, as you'll see by some of the people we talk about, it sort of strangely connects me to some of the places I have worked, like the Australian Museum, this world of colonial natural history.
Yep.
And photography.
Yeah. So it kind of encapsulates your
various... To me, it just brought it all together.
Now, you talked about the inscription on the back, and I think a good lesson for all of us researching photographs, artworks, archaeological objects in my case, that always look on the other side as well. The inscription, that was one of the leads that led you off on one of the stories. What does it actually say?
Well, the studio stamp on the back is, as I said, T.S. Glaister. Glaister had a studio in Sydney from the mid-1850s through to about 1870. So instantly, without knowing anything about this photograph, I've got a date range. He's an interesting character. He actually had learnt photography in New York. He came from America. He's learnt when at that stage it was daguerreotypes, and he comes through and he's very successful in Sydney, and he also sells photographic supplies. From about 1862, he's offering in his advertisements carte de visite portraits. And so I know that Glaister actually leaves the business in 69 to go to San Francisco to run a winery.
Oh.
But his son and stepson continue the gallery, his business, until a terrible fire of November 1870. So again, I'm in the 1860s.
Yeah. Do you know where in Sydney he was based? Was it in the
He was around, they all usually have a number of addresses, but actually most of his were around Pitt Street,
right, okay.
At different ends of Pitt Street. The other thing that's written in handwriting on the card are two handwritings. One is the scientific name Dedunculus strigorostris, and in another hand, extinct question mark.
Mm.
So I might tell you then about the name.
Yes.
And what we are looking at and why.
Yes.
It's of significance.
Tell us about the bird.
Okay, this is actually a rare critically endangered bird today.
Yeah.
The name, the scientific name, comes in 1845 when an Englishman, William Jardine, describes the bird in England from a specimen, apparently from a Lady Harvey who purchased at a sale what was called Australian Productions.
Mm.
So he identified it then, and this is known as the tooth-billed pigeon, generally we refer to it, with strigorostris meaning sort of like a serrated bill. That was the feature.
Right.
Jardine actually calls it Nathodon, that's a GN Nathodon, a strigorostris, but then finds that that genus name had been in use for a mollusk. What Jardine doesn't know, but they hear about soon, is around 1838-42, there's a United States, one of those Pacific exploring expeditions under Charles Wilkes. Going around the Pacific, they go to Samoa.
Yeah.
The naturalist Titian Peel, he actually, I think I may collect one or two of the birds, but he actually calls it Dedunculus strigorostris, and Dedunculus meaning little dodo. because it actually, this pigeon is related to the dodo taxonomy.
Yeah.
So word is heard, and it's just these sort of networks of knowledge, but word is heard in England at the ornithology meeting. And so Jardine is the first namer of it, but it becomes Dedunculus trigorostris. Interestingly, John Gould does a beautiful drawing from Jardine's specimen in Birds of Australia, because initially when that when they were describing it, they didn't know where it was from.
Yes, right.
And it's a stunning drawing. Mm. But he actually calls it Nathodon in his drawing. And so you can just see knowledge and that travelling. So that is the bird, a very rare and unknown bird at that period of time.
So obviously it's of great interest to naturalists. You know, going forward, and we'll talk about the photograph in a moment, but once it was identified, then there's more
There were only a couple of specimens. So there is this one specimen in England, and interestingly, what is in this associated with this photo are different characters, not particularly this bird, but in this story of how this bird came to Sydney. There is a missionary in Samoa in 1843, a Reverend John Stair. He later writes his recollections. He was very interested in the bird, and in 1843 one is captured, one dies, and his friend takes it through to Sydney. And sadly, it dies. And John Stair, he writes that this specimen is the one that goes to Lady Harvey and is the one Jardine. I don't know if that's accurate, but he pops up later. But you've got this interest, but you've only got this specimen known in England.
Yes.
And so then everyone becomes very interested in getting a live one. So I'll move into the next part of the story.
At this stage, they still think it's from Australia, do they?
But I'm saying here from the Peel in the, they know it's Samoan. That was known once that information travelled round. So from the mid-1840s, they know.
Yep.
But it seems to be a difficult bird to actually capture.
What happens?
So we really are the 1860s then, and we have the Royal Society and that in London, they're wanting, could we, get a couple of live ones? And that word sort of travels round to the scientific bodies in Royal Society in Melbourne, and there's also the Climatisation Society in Melbourne. And our Reverend John Stair, when he sees the letters come in from England asking for this rare pigeon, he knows then that they're talking about the toothbill pigeon, our pigeon.
Yep.
And so then someone writes to the British consul in Samoa, his name's Williams, and they say, can you get some, basically?
Yep.
And so Williams then, he's able in late 1862 to actually get a live bird. And he decides that he's been trying for ages, so he has one, and it comes to Sydney. Now, this is going to be our bird in
the
portrait.
So this is the one in the photo.
And this allows me then to know why I'm coming to a date of 1863 for this image.
Yep.
The bird arrives on the 13th of June, and it's a young bird in immature plumage.
Yeah.
And another person who comes into play here is Dr. George Bennett. George Bennett is one of those doctor naturalists that you've come across in these colonial science stories. He is a doctor. He has a good practice in Sydney. He's a great naturalist. He travels a lot. He writes recollections of his travels. He's very connected to Britain, to Richard Owen. And he's also a member of the societies in Sydney. He's a member of the Acclimatisation Society in Sydney. Also, the Acclimatisation Society in Melbourne are quite interested in trying to get a pair of these birds, both with the intention of sending them to London. But it's an interesting aside here.
Was it like breeding if there's a pair?
They didn't really say that, but they wanted to see a live bird. Interestingly, Bennett's dream, and here's that, the acclimatisation, he'd hoped to actually naturalise the pigeon and release it. And so there is that sort of hint of acclimatisation, those terrible introductions of species.
Yes.
But George Bennett, he decides then a second bird actually arrives, which is a fuller grown bird, later in July. And basically, George Bennett, he decides that although the acclimatisation societies had offered to unite with him to buy them, he buys them by himself, and he's going to give them to London. So he, at this point, no living specimen is seen in Europe. And then, sadly, around the mid-September, the older bird dies. So they're back to one. Now, he puts that bird in spirits, in wet spirits, to send to Richard Owen, the great anatomist. And this amazing pigeon that we, I believe we're looking at, he's, this pigeon has travelled through to Sydney and now is in early January 64, set on a ship to England. And actually,
did it make it alive?
It arrives live, and in the 11th of April is in the Zoological Gardens Regent's Park, which becomes London Zoo. That's where, that is amazing.
What a well-travelled pigeon.
Now, because Bennett was a little nervous, he had actually, of it arriving dead, he had actually commissioned an artist in Sydney to do a drawing of the bird, because the bird is a very colourful pigeon. And one thing you don't get from this photo, of course, is colour. And then a tracing of that drawing is ended up in the Illustrated London News, but it's not in colour. So that is the story of the bird, fascinating how it gets to Sydney. But now we have to introduce why we have the photo. And I have to introduce here E.P. Ramsay, Edward Pearson Ramsay. Now, Ramsay is really known. He becomes the actual curator of the Australian Museum, which was the director, and he's there from 74 to 1916. He's a self-taught naturalist. But in 1863, when this pigeon arrives, he's about 20. He's a young naturalist. He's interested in birds, and he does write on birds. And fortunately, he wrote a short piece early in January 1864 in the IBIS Journal, which is the Journal of British Ornithologists Union. And he writes that this living specimen of this bird had been brought to Sydney by Williams, who's the consul, and he actually says it's known by Samoan people as Manumia, and he says he was allowed to examine the specimen several times. So it's a very interesting comment. We come back to the photo. And who donated it? So here's the more clues. So the photos was donated by the Ramsay family. So this is all surmised that it's coming together. So, and the surprise here is that we have three copies.
I was going to ask you about this. So
this reflects the wonderful nature of carte de visites. So the great change in photography from the 1850s, when they went to glass negatives and album prints, is you could have multiples. And the sales of carte de visites, even for your portrait, you could buy one, you could buy six, you could buy a dozen. The price. So we have three, and they've come from the Ramsay family. Two of them came in a 1974 donation by Ramsay's son, JSP, and it was a various collection of postcards and photos and sort of visiting cards. Interesting, JSP Ramsay later became a bird photographer, but you won't go there.
It's in the family.
And there was one other that came in 1996, was donated by Ramsay's grandson, J.P. Ramsay, who'd just found it in some surviving papers. Now, he writes, the grandson, that all of the three carte de visites have in the handwriting of the species, Didunculus strigorostris. He says that's the hand of E.P. Ramsay. The inked word, which says question mark extinct, is in, he said, his father, J.S.P. I don't know. I haven't compared. But we do know that Ramsay examined the pigeon. He doesn't say he had his photograph taken, but my surmise is that if he either had Glaister photographed them or he's acquired three, and it's Bennett never says he had a photograph taken. So my surmise is that it is Ramsay who had the bird photographed. There are always puzzles still that remain. We don't know where it was actually taken. And we don't know really, except that we can narrow it into that most likely 1863.
That's amazing. Well, I guess ultimately the question is it easier to get the bird to Glaister's studio, or is it easier to get the photography equipment to wherever the bird's being kept in Sydney?
Probably they took it to where the bird was. Bennett does talk a lot later, once he has them, about keeping them for the a journey in that. I think they had people from Samoa who actually looked after the birds and fed them.
Yes, right.
Bennett lost, when one died, they didn't know what to feed it. They really didn't know a lot about it. And then they sort of, my guess is it was taken, and at this stage it was still possibly with the Consul Williams, who I don't know where he was.
Yes.
So it is a mystery.
Yeah.
The Ramseys are is one of those families that generate a lot of documents in that, and perhaps in somewhere in their papers in Mitchell there might be another hint. But it's very early, because his interest, Ramsey then becomes very interested in Australian birds, Australian fishes,
right,
and
yes,
so on.
Yes.
But these little cartilages, it's just survived in his family papers.
Yes, yes.
And
yeah, so it's interesting that he may have given away some of them if there were more.
Or did he post them to someone, or did he do nothing with them? Because this is sort of one of the interests of science and photography. This is a time, once photography happens, it allows scientists to actually send photos of specimens.
Yes.
This is a huge change.
Yes.
Instead of doing drawings or writing, you see photography at the Australian Museum. And it's a way of swapping.
Yep.
So at this point, I don't know whether it went anywhere else. But there's always more things to find out, I think. But it's to actually, from a little unprepossessing, you could say, image.
Yeah.
But if it didn't have the name on the back, it wouldn't have gone anywhere.
Yeah.
I would have said portrait of a bird or
yes,
something.
Yes. Well, the fact that the species is identified.
I know, was the big giver, was yeah. a great gift. And then, you know, it's an unknown photos.
Yes.
Because it's just been in our collection, and I really didn't get it data, you know, into us till I was looking into the studio. So it's only been in past years.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, I think.
Are all three of them in the museum collection?
Yes, all three look the same.
Yeah.
One doesn't have extinct, but they all three have the name.
The
so someone went to the trouble of writing the scientific name on them.
Was Ramsey a big record keeper in terms of other material that he dealt with?
Well, you know, I suspect increasingly he certainly when he was curator, he did instigate much more formal record keeping systems,
right, so.
And that. And there is a very large family archive in the Mitchell Library,
yep.
yet I've not explored it in any depth, but there is a lot that he was so involved with science here and then and different places, and particularly England, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
So we know if Glaister took other photographs of natural history specimens,
no.
or is this?
So,
I mean, it must be interesting. Do you get the message that,
yeah.
you know, we're commissioning you to photograph
I
a
know.
Bird?
Well, that's what I thought. One of the interests I have in this is it made me think, and I actually put it on display in that earlier exhibition along with portraits. They could take the camera out of the studio,
yeah.
of course, and they did. But I've seen houses and landscapes. I haven't in this period yet seen this sort of an animal in captivity.
Yeah.
And in fact, sort of my revisiting of it partly is now I've sort of become interested in animals in photography.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of looking how that has happened. And there are pets in photographs in earlier periods.
Yeah.
There are definitely specimens, like,
yes,
you know, dead animals, scientific animals.
Yeah.
Captivity, so it just requires more. They don't leap out at me at this point.
Yeah.
So in terms of photography, I think it's actually quite interesting as well
yeah.
to explore whether there are more.
The evolution of the images of animals.
That's right. And that's where I've been actually rethinking it away, actually thinking of the representation of animals and into captivity. And it was only in 1864 then the London Zoo, they commissioned a photographer, Frank Hayes, to actually photograph animals, which I think he issues as stereo. So the idea of capturing animals in captivity, which is in essence this poor little pigeon, is,
When it got to London, did it live for long?
That's what I haven't found out yet.
Out,
so
yeah.
I think its story in London is sort of beyond the photo, but it would be nice to know. I have to try and dig around. George Bennett writes quite a lot. He publishes quite a lot of his observations and thoughts on it in the newspapers in Sydney, and then he actually writes quite a few things about the pigeon in like the overseas scientific
journal.
So it's actually the missionary, John Stair, he writes a lovely detailed recollection of his time and his encounters with the birds and what happens. And we've got Ramsey's short piece. So there's quite some nice information about it.
You're listening to Object Matters, the podcast of the Chow Chak Wing Museum. My guest for this episode is Jan Brazier. Jan, you've kind of already answered this to some degree in your previous answers, but have you found the way that you connect with the photograph has changed over the time you've worked with it at the museum?
Well, as we were just saying, I think my recent interest in has been in animals in photography, and so I'm looking at this story of this toothbill pigeon with that in mind, rather than my initial encounter was really about commercial studios and the sort of work they undertook.
Yeah.
And remembering that it wasn't all people's portraits,
yes,
and that they did go outside the studio.
Yes.
But I think there's more research for me to do in exactly how many animal portraits are in this period in particular.
Mm. Mm. And what types of animals too.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
I mean, the pose of it is fascinating with, you know, on the hand as,
yes,
well, which really indicates that the bird's used to humans, or,
yeah,
at least is not completely distressed about.
Yes, and that's, I have talked to our natural history curator, Tony Gill, and about just checking on this identifications and so on. And he said that, in fact, that sitting on the hand like that is actually one where they will settle.
Yeah, right.
And also remembering that the photograph would have taken just a few seconds.
Yes,
so, Bennett writes about the second pigeon that did die, that it was wilder and caring for it was harder. Yes.
Mm. Now, the question everyone who appears on the podcast gets asked is this one. If you could choose a single word to describe your connection to the photograph, what word would you choose?
This was very difficult, but after thinking about it, I think I'm going to say rarity, because I think it's in a way a sad photo. It's a photo of a rare bird. It's a critically endangered bird to today.
Yes.
The only, I don't know how many, but not many are known to survive. And it's got the link in itself to the dodo. It's actually, I think, a rare photograph of a known bird. We know a lot about, strangely, this pigeon. And it's an uncommon photograph of a living animal in,
yeah,
this period. But at the same time, rarity, I have in mind that multiplicity of carte de visite. So,
yeah,
people like to think photographs are unique,
yeah,
but in fact, it does have that reproducibility.
Yes.
Which, you know, I think is wonderful. And the other thing that I would just say about this photograph that I was thinking recently is how marvellous photography is, and that this little image is 160 years old.
Yes.
Which I just thought, how remarkable and wonderful photography has been for, we're so used to it, but in starting to document in that role of,
yeah,
recording,
yeah,
our world. And I have been just thinking of the age of these tiny carte de visite.
Yeah. You're right. It's at a real revolution in terms of the way that we're thinking about the world. And trying to capture it too, isn't it? That,
yeah,
suddenly that image was available far more widely than,
yes,
the illustrations,
yes,
that would have
been
used earlier in the century.
And photography just took off for science as well. So, but I was just thinking then, just to the context of actually working out how old it was, is quite remarkable.
Yeah, and knowing specifically which bird it is too.
Indeed.
Which is,
yeah, <that's>
what
wonderful.
An amazing bit of detective work you've undertaken. This is great.
It was a lovely thing to unfold.
So if visitors to the Chow Chak Wing Museum ever got to see the photograph, or any of the three images, what would you like them to think about?
I would like them to think about the importance of writing on the back of photographs or identifying,
yes,
them, which is something that we think come across
or
all the time.
Metadata in a digital
metadata, which
context.
None of us do.
No, none of us do.
But that's just an aside. But when you're cataloguing or trying to identify, I would like them to think, of course, this is a sad story of and how we've lost species.
Yes.
And I think this pigeon tells that story. And, yes, I think I would think about, ask people just to think about how photography operated, why it's a carte de visite, that early history of photography, and that it wasn't just people whose portraits were captured, but, in fact, in this case, an actual known,
yeah,
tooth-billed pigeon.
This has been great, Jan. Thank you so much for sharing that story. Thank you for letting us view this image and all the research you've done into it. It's been a real pleasure having you on this episode.
Oh, it's been wonderful. Thank you, Craig.
Thank you. Object Matters is recorded on the grounds of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and the Chow Chak Wing Museum wishes to acknowledge the traditional custodians of these lands.
Subscribe to Object Matters on your favourite podcast app and connect with the Chowchak Wing Museum on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. You can also subscribe to our monthly e-newsletter, News Extra, via our website, sydney.edu.au/museum.